No matter what you've heard, if you like your doctor or healthcare plan, you can keep it.
But we have to pass the bill so that you can find out what is in it.
Hello and welcome into this Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this hour of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity. Hoping you had a good weekend and that you are fired up and ready for another Monday. We are just a day away from Super Tuesday, where people all over the country will go to the polls to make some decisive, cast some decisive ballots at the ballot box. I hope you're paying attention to what's going on in your local area. This is one of those opportunities where politicians love to throw things in to change laws, to amend state constitutions, to give government more power. And I think it's important that you pay very, very, very close attention to what's going on in your local elections and to study the amendments that are on the ballot instead of just saying, whatever, or, oh, no, never. Find out what's really going on, because sometimes, not the majority of times, but sometimes there are good things. Sometimes. Hi there. Nice to have you along today. I hope you're doing well. I hope this is going to be a good day for you. And I hope that that you're ready, because we're just a few days away from losing an hour of sleep. Yes, we spring forward this weekend as daylight saving time begins. It's not daylight savings time. It's daylight saving time. We are saving daylight, at least according to the politicians who set this all up years and years ago, and it should be repealed. I'm just saying, it's just silly. I say we stay on the daylight saving time schedule, just stick to that year round, and everybody will be fine. That's the way I see it. Let's just do that. Have more light in the afternoons all year round. Wouldn't that be better? I think so. And there are people who have tried. They've really tried. They've tried to make it happen, but so far, not able to get it done. What's wrong with you people in D.C. anyway? Let's get this changed. It's just stupid. We don't need it anymore. We're living in an age where farmers have equipment which is all computer controlled. They have headlights on tractors. We have the ability to do what we did before with the aid of technology. And we no longer need to set our clocks to different times to make that more possible. And for those of you who are saying, well, what about the little kids standing in the dark waiting for the school bus? Seriously, where do kids stand in the dark waiting for school buses? And if that's an issue, why don't you head up the push to have lights put in those areas? Huh? Why don't you? Or why don't parents groups take care of the situation themselves instead of leaning on government to handle things? Come on, we don't need to change time. It's over. It's done. It's antiquated. It's no longer necessary. Let's make that change now. Let's get it done. Somebody get on that today, okay? I'm busy. I got a nap. It's a Monday edition of the podcast, and there's all kinds of stuff to talk about. As I was collecting this, that, and the other thing to be chatting about today, the list kept getting longer and longer and longer. And you know what's crazy is 3/4 of it I'll never get to. There's so much stuff. Coronavirus is in the news. Joe Biden. And Joe Biden won the South Carolina primary. He calls it a real comeback. He's setting his sights on Super Tuesday. And one of the things that he said, and I'm posting this in the absurd category, okay? One of the things he said was that Democrats won House seats in 2018. Well, he's just as wrong about that as he is about everything else. No, the Democrats didn't actually win those House seats. Michael Bloomberg bought those House seats. He said so himself during that last debate. Didn't you hear him? He said he was responsible that he bought, got those. Remember? Also, come on, creepy Uncle Joe. You know you won South Carolina because of your connection to Obama, because you were his VP, not because you're the better candidate. The whole strategy there was to woo the black vote by using Obama's name recognition. It worked. And there are those who are saying it may work in other states in the South. So just remember that. When Biden wins in the South, he's not winning because he's Joe Biden. He's not winning on his own merit. He's riding on the coattails of Barack Obama. He's getting the black vote because he was a black president's vice president. And that's the only reason he's getting the votes. Members of the black communities in those areas who actually are studying things and know what they're voting for, not just name recognition, are not voting for Joe Biden. They're just not. In fact, a lot of them are voting Republican because they've seen that for over 50 years, the Democrats have been lying to them. So for Joe Biden to claim that he's had a real comeback and that he's winning votes is ridiculous. It's absurd, if I might say. Another thing that's in the absurd category is, how would you like to get paid $47 million a year? I think that a lot of people would. I know I would. Can I get paid $47 million a year and just keep doing what I'm doing? That'd be awesome. Well, that is what Judy Scheinlin was making. Yep. She is going to announce today officially that her hit courtroom show Judge Judy is coming to an end after 25 seasons. In an appearance on the Ellen DeGeneres Show, she says the 2021 season will be the last year for the CBS institution. She's assured viewers her court will remain in session thanks to her new show called Judy Justice. Quote, I've had a 25-year-long marriage with CBS and it's been successful. Next year will be our 25th season, silver anniversary. And CBS sort of felt, I think, they wanted to optimally utilize the repeats of my program because now they have 25 years of reruns. So what they decided to do was sell a couple of years worth of reruns. But I'm not tired, so Judy Justice will be coming out a year later. And a Hollywood Reporter has confirmed the end of Judge Judy. It was unclear whether Judy Justice will be another syndicated program or whether it will appear on a network or other outlet. Asked by Ellen DeGeneres where viewers will be able to watch the new show, she just said, I can't tell you yet. But she did add, Judge Judy, you'll be able to see next year, a full year, all new shows. The following couple of years, you should be able to catch all the reruns that CBS has sold to the stations that are currently carrying Judge Judy, and Judy Justice will be going elsewhere. Isn't that fun? 77-year-old Scheinlin, a retired Manhattan family court judge known for her no-nonsense style, is reportedly the highest-paid personality on TV. She's earned $47 million a year since her 2015 contract went into effect, and that expires after this season. In 2018, she sold the rights to Judge Judy, the reruns, to CBS for an estimated $100 million. The deal has inspired a series of lawsuits. The show won 3 Emmy Awards. It's been among the top-rated syndicated TV programs. It was the most-watched court show, averaging about 9 million viewers a day. Woo! Holy cow. So she's made a ton of money, $47 million a year for the last 5 years, and then sold the rights to the show for $100 million. I'd say she's primed for retirement, but she's not going to. She's going to keep on working. Odds are you'll be able to find her new show. I wouldn't be at all surprised if it became one of the package shows for a streaming network, because that's a very lucrative thing today. Now, one thing, she's a very no-nonsense person. She deals with these people who come into her court kind of like your mom would. She doesn't take any guff off of anybody. She doesn't take any flack. And she just kind of tells them the truth about their idiocy. So she's a favorite for lots of people just because she doesn't take crap off of anybody. But you have to question her judgment because of one thing. She broke her long-standing silence back in October on politics and endorsed Bloomberg. So Judge Judy endorsed Michael Bloomberg. Bloomberg's entire purpose for being in the race is to destroy Donald Trump. So, why? Why are you there? Why are you endorsing this guy whose entire purpose is to destroy the president who's done so much good for the country? Why? Eh. God love her. I guess she's not as bright as people think she is. Hey, another thing in politics, going across the Atlantic, going to London. You know, a lot of people are not happy with Sadiq Khan. He's the guy who's the mayor of London. And that's his mayoral style has prompted a lot of people to start referring to London as London Stan, because it's become a Muslim hotspot. Well, somebody is stepping up, among others, to challenge Sadiq Khan in the upcoming election. And he calls himself Count Binface. Yes, Count Binface, a self-proclaimed fearless space warrior who he ran against UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson in last year's general election. He's announced his plans to run for mayor of London, vowing to take out the trash. Binface, who also ran against Theresa May in the 2017 election under the alias of Lord Buckethead, said he's throwing his bin into the ring because the race needed shaking up. He calls himself Lord Binface, by the way, because he wears this bizarre costume with a helmet that looks like a trash bin, a trash can, a big metal trash can. In England, they refer to trash cans as the bin. Oh, you can bin that, right? Binface told the Press Association, "It's the greatest city on the planet. I call it the Earth Capital. As such, it needs people from outside Earth to pay its dues. Mayor of London is a fantastic title in itself, and as somebody who already has a title, it suits me down to the ground." You already had a couple of mayors who people have said, "Oh my God, what have we done?" So why not have someone who's already outlandish before they become mayor instead? He has a GoFundMe page set up. He's raised about $1,600. Ooh. A former conservative who ran for the party's leadership, Rory Stewart, he got expelled for his opposition to a no-deal Brexit. He's running as an independent candidate. He reacted to Binface's announcement with mock horror. "No, I was almost winning. Come up into second place, convincing people that Sadiq Khan wasn't really the active mayor we need for the future. Almost there. And now this unstoppable force is coming up on the inside." Oh, gosh. Sadiq Khan, he's a Labour Party guy, which means he's a liberal. He's been mayor of London since 2016 when he succeeded Boris Johnson. Khan has frequently clashed with President Trump, who has called the mayor incompetent for a perceived inability to tackle knife crime in the British capital. Last September, when Khan mocked the president for golfing as Hurricane Dorian approached, Trump tweeted, "Khan should focus on knife crime, which is totally out of control in London. People are afraid to even walk the streets. He's a terrible mayor who should stay out of our business." The London mayoral election, by the way, is May 7th. If you'd like to keep track of just exactly how far along Count Bitface makes it. Oh, man. And back to Sadiq Khan. You know, they have a zero-tolerance policy as far as guns are concerned. Actually, only special divisions of their police carry guns. It's been widely known for quite some time that the police in London usually don't carry guns. They carry the nightsticks that they've been known for quite some time. And there are those who do carry guns, but they are not the rank and file. And the general populace is, except for extreme rarities, they're not allowed to have guns, not allowed to carry. And this is an example to those of us who live in the United States where politicians are telling us that's the answer, that you should ban guns and only the police should have guns. Well, London is the prime example for why that doesn't work, because even though the criminals aren't supposed to have guns. Nobody's supposed to have guns. They use knives. People walking up to people with knives and robbing them at knife point. People hurting each other with knives because they're not supposed to have guns. And there are still those who have guns illegally. Why? There's an old saying, when guns are outlawed, only outlaws will have guns. We're seeing that playing out in England today under the leadership of Sadiq Khan and others on the left in the Labour Party. So remember that when people on the left in the United States tell you we'll be a safer society without guns. We have examples, and those examples tell us that's pretty much just another leftist lie.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
I know, especially on a Monday, this close to daylight saving time. Come on. It's the Monday edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast, and it's good to have you along. Thanks for joining the fun. Well, it was a big weekend in the presidential race on the Democrat side. Two people have stepped away from their campaigns and will no longer be in the running. Tom Steyer, the billionaire who was constantly at the bottom of the rankings, barely showing up at all in anything, he's decided to walk away. And Pete Buttigieg ended his presidential campaign yesterday in an abrupt and surprising pullout that further narrows the field of Democrats less than a month after he declared victory in the contested Iowa caucuses. He said, I'll do everything in my power to ensure that we have a new Democratic president come January. He told that to a throng of enthusiastic and emotional supporters in South Bend, Indiana, Sunday night, in a speech marked by an upbeat and forward-looking timbre. He said, we sent a message to every kid out there wondering if whatever marked them out as different means they are destined to be less than. He said that chants of USA and other cheers. To see someone who once felt that exact same way can become a leading presidential candidate with his husband at his side. Excuse me, you were never a leading candidate, Mayor Pete. You really never were. You were, if I may just be blunt, you were the curiosity everybody wanted to see in the Democrat freak show. And I am sorry to say that, but that is just the bottom line truth. The reason you were in the race. Let's just move forward. I'll get back to this. Buttigieg's husband, Chasten, introduced the candidate by remarking through tears that Pete got me to believe in myself again. I told Pete to run because I knew there were other kids that needed to believe in themselves too. I want you to remember these statements these guys are making, okay? Buttigieg had been scheduled to headline a rally in Dallas last night. The charter plane was rerouted. His withdrawal came just days before 14 states are set to head to the polls on Super Tuesday, where one-third of all delegates for the nomination will be at stake. His exit likely will harm front-runner Bernie Sanders by providing a coalescing boost to more moderate candidates. That's one of those things that makes you go, Buttigieg had gone on the offensive against the Vermont senator and sought to appeal to the centrist base of the party. Many early votes have already been cast, however. A senior campaign aide told Fox News, where this story is coming from, by the way, told Fox News the decision was absolutely not because of his failure to reach his Super Tuesday fundraising goal of $13 million. The campaign announced Sunday that it needed another $1.6 million to reach that target. The aide says, Pete believes this is the right thing to do for our country, for our party, and for Americans across the country eager to heal our divided nation. Defeat this president and work to fix our broken politics. Hours earlier, speaking to NBC News Meet the Press, Buttigieg vowed that we'll be assessing at every turn not only what the right answer is for the campaign, but making sure that every step we take is the best in the best interest of the party and that goal of making sure we defeat Donald Trump, because our country can't take four more years of this. Translation, the Democrat Party can't take four more years of this, because with every turn, they're revealing exactly what scumbags and criminals they actually are. Every time they step up to fight against Trump, their lies get more outrageous and their tactics become more transparent. Last week, Buttigieg told Fox News Peter Ducey that by Super Tuesday, stupid Tuesday, we could be on an irreversible trajectory toward nominating Senator Sanders unless we come together around an alternative. I'm offering to be that alternative. He narrowly defeated Sanders by delegate count in Iowa, but has since suffered a string of defeats, culminating in his drubbing in South Carolina Saturday, where he finished fourth behind billionaire Tom Steyer. President Trump, meanwhile, repeatedly derided what he called Buttigieg's resemblance to the pathetic cartoon character Alfred E. Newman from Mad Magazine. Buttigieg also faced criticism for allegedly plagiarizing former Barack Obama's speeches and imitating his intonation. Trump wrote on Twitter yesterday, "Pete Buttigieg is out. All of his Super Tuesday votes will go to Sleepy Joe Biden. Great timing. This is the real beginning of the Dems taking Bernie out of play. No nomination again." The former South Bend, Indiana mayor has had limited political experience, but sought to build his campaign on his military service and the possibility that he could become the first openly gay president. Okay, first off, his military service, he was something like an office clerk. He worked in an office. You've seen the pictures of him holding a rifle in uniform. And people who've been in the military have noted, nobody who's actually had real training holds a rifle that way. And there are those who have said he actually didn't go through real training. He worked in an office. And he didn't work there long. It was just something to add to the resume, is what some are saying. And the possibility that he could become the first openly gay president. That was the entire reason for his being. Now we go back to what he and Chastain said at the announcement thing last night, where they had hoped that they could prove to downtrodden children that people who were different, translation, gay, could actually succeed in life. Well, here's a news item for you. People who are gay have been succeeding in life for a very long time. You want to know how? I'll tell you how. By not making an issue out of the fact that they're gay. That's how they've made a difference. That's how they've made it in life. They focused on their careers. They've focused on their field of interest. They've focused on life. Not on one tiny sliver of life. When you make your sexuality the core of your reason for being, then there are mental issues, which need to be discussed. When that is the core of everything, and we're seeing this play out in our society all around us today, where people are denying gender science, biology, for their own personal preference. And that has split out of the LGBTQ, et cetera, movement. Because they insist on making their sexuality the core of their existence. It's not the core of anyone's existence. It is a tiny part of it. And when you focus on that one thing, you focus on that one aspect of life, you throw everything else out of balance. And when you throw it all out of balance, you're never going to rise. You're never going to move forward unless you have the support of other people who choose to live an unbalanced life. And that is the entire reason Pete Buttigieg was in this race. He was there for the LGBTQ movement. That's why he was there. I said so from the very beginning. As soon as he announced and it was made public that he was the first openly gay presidential candidate to start making waves, I knew that was exactly why he was there. And that was why he was such a darling of so many people on the left. Because he was a member of a victim group. Or one of their perceived victim groups. Pete Buttigieg was never a viable candidate. He was not a viable mayor. The people of South Bend, Indiana were unhappy with him. He couldn't win the black vote because the people of South Bend didn't like how he handled things in the black community there. He was always riding one issue in order to keep moving forward, and that was his sexuality. That is what made him a star among leftists and progressives everywhere. They adored him because he was the gay guy who was going to prove to everybody that being gay meant you could succeed in life at whatever you wanted to succeed in. And I'll say again, there have already been a lot of successful people who were gay. And nobody knew they were gay unless they were close to them. This imbalance will always wind up defeating you in the end. But we have to ask ourselves now, did the DNC, the Democrat Party, did they pressure him to step out so those votes would go to Joe Biden instead of Bernie Sanders? Was he offered a vice presidential gig for stepping down? Things that make you go,
They looked at me as if I had lobsters crawling out of my ears.
And they should have. Welcome back to The Daily Perspective. Hi there. It's the Monday edition of the podcast. The second day of March 2020. Tomorrow is Super Tuesday. The Saturday night / Sunday morning, we all set our clocks forward an hour. Or if you live in a home, a household that has lots of internet-connected stuff, you don't do anything. It all just sets forward for you. Heck, that's happening. That's our week. Thanks, you've been a great crowd. See you later. It's a... I'm looking at my list of stuff here, and it looks like... Honestly, it looks like for the rest of everything, it's all coronavirus, coronavirus, coronavirus. I'm looking down my list of things here, and let's see, just as an amusing thing... Bernie, did you see where Bernie Sanders got on the wrong private jet the other day? He did. He walks out across the tarmac at the airport, walks up onto the wrong plane, turns around, walks off that plane, and then gets on the right plane. He can't keep track of which one of his planes he's supposed to be on. He ended up taking three different planes as he moved around. He was going someplace that was a 2-hour drive. At one point, and he's flying by private jet for a 2-hour drive. Took 10 minutes by plane, but it's a 2-hour drive. Throwing lots and lots and lots and lots of money at a campaign. God bless the United States of America and capitalism. Because without capitalism, Bernie Sanders would not be able to fly private jets. Thank God for capitalism, because Bernie Sanders would be driving 2 hours to meet the people he's got to go meet instead of taking private jets. Oh, and God bless capitalism, because without capitalism, there wouldn't be cars for Bernie Sanders to take between places either. But Bernie Sanders and his people won't tell you about that part. Without capitalism, democratic, I'm air quoting, democratic socialism would not exist. In fact, no form of socialism, which is just the first step. Actually, Marx said so. Was it Marx or Lenin? One of them said that socialism was just the introduction for communism. And we've been watching Bernie Sanders lately and listening to what he's had to say. And it's fairly obvious the man's not a socialist, really. He's a communist. And he's a commie that loves him some private planes, doggone it. He's also a millionaire. God bless capitalism. Well, the coronavirus is spreading. Nobody who's been paying attention is surprised. It is a virus. This is what viruses do. They spread. The science is telling us, oddly enough, those people who accuse conservatives of being anti-science don't ever listen to science when it disagrees with what they like, what they prefer. The science tells us it's not as harmful or deadly as the flu, just influenza. More people will die from influenza, probably this year, than from coronavirus. But people keep ignoring the advice. In fact, one place that has been essentially travel banned now because of their refusal to accept help and to listen to advice is Iran. And there are lots and lots of people. The incidence of sickness and death in Iran is much higher than it is in other places in the world because they refuse to accept any assistance or advice from anywhere else. And now, an advisor to Iran's supreme leader has died from the coronavirus. The advisor to Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, died from coronavirus as other top officials in the country are confirmed to be infected, according to multiple reports today. The Iranian health ministry recorded 523 new cases in the past 24 hours, bringing the country's known total, because they're not going to report everything. They never have, and they never will, to a total of 1,501. I would suspect it's much, at least four times that high. They mark a 53% increase since the day before. Mohammad Mirhomadi, 71 years of age, was an expedition council member who advised Khamenei and settled disputes between him and Parliament. COVID-19 has already infected Iran's vice president and deputy health minister. His death comes after the government said on Monday, they were rejecting help from the Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, who announced last week the U.S. was concerned Iran may have covered up details on the spread of the virus. Duh. Wow. Foreign Ministry spokesman Abbas Mousavi said during a briefing on Monday, "We neither count on such help nor are we ready to accept verbal help." He added the country has always been suspicious over American intentions and that the U.S. government was trying to weaken Iranians' spirits over the outbreak. Oh, that's fine. You can take that attitude while your people die. That is exactly how dictatorships work, by the way, and that's what Iran has going for it. A dandy little dictatorship. Iran's mortality rate from the virus is roughly 5.5% compared to an overall fatality rate of about 2% in China. And remember, in China, that's where it's been the worst. That's where we have seen the most horrific results of this virus. In China, it's 2%. And now we know, just from the information we can get out of Iran, they're looking at more than almost three times that much. 5.5%. Easily more than twice. The difference in rates has led people to suggest the number of infections in Iran is higher than what the country has officially reported. The country's first case was reported less than 2 weeks ago. The virus has killed at least 66 people in Iran, the highest death toll outside of China. The majority of 1,150 cases throughout the Middle East are linked back to Iran. Iran was preparing for the possibility of testing tens of thousands of people following a spike of cases on Saturday. The country has closed schools and universities due to COVID-19, but religious Shiite shrines have remained open. Last week, Iranians were captured licking some of the shrines in defiance of the coronavirus. You know, there was a joke that went around on Twitter and other social media in the last couple of weeks. It was a text message from the Bloomberg campaign, or actually, no, it was from the Bernie Sanders campaign. Hi, I'm so-and-so from the Bernie Sanders campaign. Just wanted to see if we could count on your help in defeating Donald Trump and turning this country around. And the response was, I'd rather go to Wuhan, China and lick doorknobs. It was a joke. And what's happening in Iran? People are licking the shrines. Monday, today, India has announced two positive cases of COVID-19. According to the country's Ministry of Health, one person was found to be infected in New Delhi and had a travel history from Italy. We know it's been there. The other was from the southern state of Telangana and had a travel history from Dubai. Both patients are being closely monitored, according to the department. Dr. Harshvardhan, Union Minister of Health and Family Welfare, says, depending on the global evolving scenario, travel restrictions could be imposed as a precautionary measure. Intelligence agencies had concerns over India's lack of countermeasures to the virus and said its dense population could fuel a widespread outbreak. That's according to Reuters. You have to remember that early on, our president banned travel from where we knew the virus was spreading, China. And his opponents on the left, the Democrats, all screamed, racism! Because, of course, when you are a leftist,
everything is racist! According to me.
Yep, everything is racist, and you accuse others of racism in order to condemn them for what they believe, because you can't stand in the light of day against them with any solutions. Well, now the coronavirus has officially made it to the eastern coast of the United States of America. The Rhode Island Department of Health announced yesterday that it has confirmed a presumptive positive case of COVID-19, otherwise known as coronavirus. Health officials said the patient is a 40-year-old man who traveled to Italy in mid-February. That's an area of the world that has since become a hotbed for coronavirus diagnoses. The patient's location was not released. However, officials said the person has had limited travel since returning to the U.S. Rhode Island is one place where we're also hearing that it was Manhattan. Hopefully we'll get some clarification on that today. Outreach has begun to people who were in direct contact with this person. There are extensive efforts underway to ensure that they undergo a period of 14 days of self-monitoring for symptoms at home with public health supervision. That's called quarantine. As long as anyone exposed to the individual doesn't have symptoms outside their home setting, the virus can't spread to other people in the community. The person's immediate family members have been self-quarantining at home since it was determined that the person met the criteria based on travel history to be evaluated for coronavirus, according to the health department. The Rhode Island Department of Health said it is monitoring 40 people who have had contact with this patient. Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo, a Democrat, said at a news conference Sunday that there is no reason to panic. Quote, the general level of risk for Rhode Islanders is low. There's no need for panic. There's no need to be frightened. As of Sunday, there are now more than 70 confirmed cases of coronavirus in the United States, mostly on the West Coast. However, a third person in Illinois was also diagnosed with coronavirus on Saturday. Unfortunately, a Seattle area man in his 50s was the first confirmed American to die from coronavirus. A Washington State health officials announced that on Saturday. I think we've actually had a second one. Both were elderly. Both had other medical challenges. And that is something we need to remember as far as the coronavirus is concerned. If you're healthy, generally healthy, you most likely don't have anything to fear from the coronavirus except getting a little bit sick. It's those who have other infirmities who have a risk factor. And that's just something we need to remember, okay? Rather than panicking, rather than going crazy, let's be cool, calm, and collected. And reasonable about this. And remember, more people are probably going to die from the flu than they will coronavirus. There's no reason to panic. Just be wise. Okay? All right. Still to come. A little bit more on Creepy Uncle Joe after the break. Welcome back to the Daily Perspective Podcast. Good to have you along today. Rolling into the final segment for this Monday, the first Monday in March of 2020. It's March 2nd. Coffee. It's a good thing. Just a quick reminder, tomorrow is Super Tuesday. Vote happening. Votes happening all over the country. Lots of places. And another reminder that if you have things happening, like there are a lot of elections happening across the country where there are amendments to state constitutions and things like that happening, I encourage you to take just a few minutes today to find out what's on the ballot and to see what they're asking you to vote on and vote intelligently. And then please explore beyond what they claim. Please, beyond what they are claiming. Find out what's really going on. Back to the coronavirus for just a minute. There's a guy who tested positive for the coronavirus. He told Fox News over the weekend, people need to stop freaking out about the outbreak. Quote, I'm not the one to advise the experts on this, but I personally believe that it's not the scary thing that everyone thinks it is. That's what he told Neil Cavuto on Your World. His name is Mark Jorgensen. Jorgensen and his wife were evacuated from the Diamond Princess cruise ship in Japan. You remember that. It was kind of like a big Petri dish where they were growing coronavirus. Authorities quarantined the ship after a man who exited in Hong Kong had tested positive. According to Jorgensen, his wife initially tested positive and stayed in Japan, while he didn't get a positive result until he was back in the U.S. Speaking from his hospital bed in California, Jorgensen said he's just fine. Quote, I'm not symptomatic. My wife tested positive without symptoms, and it is now clear of it. So I would say maybe we can step back and breathe a little bit and not freak out. He continued testing positive and needed to obtain two consecutive negative results in order to be released. As he was speaking with Cavuto, he said his wife had just received her second negative result and would be returning home. Over 700 other passengers and crew who were on the ship were infected with COVID-19. Which had for several weeks marked the largest instance of communal spread. A British man who was sickened by the coronavirus while aboard the cruise ship has died, reports citing the Japanese health ministry are saying. The man who had been in quarantine in Japan after testing positive for the virus marks the first foreign passenger on the ship to die. According to Kyoto News, it would also mark the first fatality involving a British citizen, according to Sky News. As of last Thursday, all the passengers who had been quarantined aboard the ship were allowed to disembark. That's according to an advisory posted by the cruise line. So a guy who's got it, he's in the hospital. He and his wife have both had it. They're just, you know, they've been going through the process to make sure they're not going to spread it to other people. So they're quarantined until they have two positive results, two tests saying they're clear. And he's saying, hey, I got a little sick, but nothing more than that. And that is what the vast majority of people who are getting the coronavirus are saying. That's what's happening in the vast majority of cases. They're getting a little sick. And that's why some have said, it's just a common cold. Well, it's not necessarily the common cold, but it's not the end of the world. And sadly, there are those who are making it seem like it's the end of the world. And they're doing it for political reasons. That's happening in the press. It's happening in the Democrat Party. They are politicizing this and making it seem like it's the end of life as we know it. Following his victory in the South Carolina primary, former President Joe Biden did a Sunday morning political talk show blitz in an effort to continue building momentum behind his candidacy as he and the Democratic field head into the Super Tuesday election tomorrow. One way Biden's working to position himself as his party's frontrunner is by attacking President Donald Trump. George Stephanopoulos asked how his administration would have handled the federal response to the coronavirus differently. And Biden went on a rant. A rant, which of course was riddled with falsehoods and hypocrisy. Biden began his answer by stating that his response to the coronavirus would have been fundamentally different from Trump's handling of the matter. He then cited the Obama administration's handling of the Ebola virus as an example of his own experience handling virus outbreaks, and attacked Trump for putting someone in charge, meaning Vice President Mike Pence, who is not a scientist. There's only one problem. The person Biden and former President Barack Obama named as the country's Ebola czar in 2014 was Ron Klain, the former VP's chief of staff. Klain was also not a scientist. In fact, he's a longtime Democratic political operative. In his diatribe, Biden also accused President Trump of muzzling scientists, which is not true. The scientist that Biden's referring to, Dr. Anthony Fauci, expressly denied that he or anyone is being muzzled at a White House press conference briefing on the coronavirus. He said, "I've never been muzzled, never, and I've been doing this since the administration of Ronald Reagan. I'm not being muzzled by this administration." In fact, Dr. Fauci explained that the White House has cleared his requests to speak to the media about the coronavirus situation. Biden also claimed the Trump administration cut the funding for the CDC. That charge has been debunked by the Associated Press, which analyzed the claim Biden made and determined no such cuts ever took place. In fact, at least one independent expert has applauded the administration's response to the coronavirus. John Auerbach, president of the Nonpartisan Trust for America's Health, said the CDC's response has been excellent, as it has been in the past. This organization works closely with officials at the local, state, and federal level to enhance the nation's readiness for health-related crisis. Creepy Uncle Joe is going full-on political. He's trying to do everything he can to condemn Trump and anything he does. And, of course, as a result, he's going to condemn the response to the coronavirus. And the, by and large, usually the news media is helping out. But he's lying, as they usually are. They usually are. If you want to look at an example from the Obama administration, as far as responses go to things like this, do you remember H1N1? Some of you do, right? You remember H1N1. Well, that's one of the creepy viruses that have emerged over the past couple of decades. There was MRSA, SARS, and H1N1. H1N1, the swine flu. That's to name a few. But the one that's getting compared most to coronavirus was swine flu, H1N1. Well, if you listen to Joe Biden, surely Barack Obama, the saint that he was, would have dealt with this horrible pandemic better than Orange Man Bad, right? No drama, Obama had this whole thing under control, of course. Okay, let's compare and contrast, shall we? The American Journal of Clinical Pathology reports that coronavirus, COVID-19, was first seen in late December. On December 30th, 2019, scientists in China, a cluster of patients with pneumonia of unknown etiology was observed in Wuhan, China, and reported to the World Health Organization, China Bureau, in Beijing. A week later, January 7th of 2020, a new coronavirus, that's SARS-CoV-2, was isolated from these patients. As we suspect, the Chinese government tried to keep the virus outbreak secret. For what reason, we don't know. What we do know, however, is that by January 31st, 2020, President Trump had declared a public health emergency and began restricting U.S. access to non-citizens from China. That's 3 weeks after they isolated the virus. 3 weeks later, a public health emergency, restriction of U.S. access to non-citizens from China. Flights filled with U.S. citizens who were in Wuhan were brought to America, and those people were quarantined on U.S. military bases for 2 weeks. Though he lamented being called a racist for doing so, Trump says if he hadn't hardened the U.S. borders at that point, the virus would have gained a bigger foothold in the country. And they did call him a racist, because everything is racist when it comes to anything Trump does, remember. Now, let's hop in the Wayback Machine with Peabody and Sherman and go back to April of 2009. That's when H1N1 became a pandemic. But it wasn't until 6 months later, in October, that then-President Barack Obama declared a public health emergency on what was already a pandemic. By that time, the disease had infected millions of Americans, and more than 1,000 people had died in the United States. 1,000. More than 1,000 people had to die before President Obama declared a public health emergency. More than 1,000 people. At the time, CNN reported, since the H1N1 flu pandemic began in April, millions of people in the United States have been infected. At least 20,000 have been hospitalized, and more than 1,000 have died. So says Dr. Thomas Frieden, director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Furthermore, the CDC's Frieden fretted that at the time that efforts to create a vaccine had stumbled. He said, we're nowhere near where we ought to be. We thought we would be. Acknowledging that manufacturing delays have contributed to less vaccine being available than expected. He went on to say, as public health professionals, vaccination is our strongest tool. Not having enough is frustrating to all of us. He said that while the way vaccine is manufactured is tried and true, it's not well suited for ramping up production during a pandemic because it takes at least 6 months. The vaccine is produced by growing weakened virus in eggs. But wait, there's more. According to Virology Journal, the 2009 H1N1 came into the U.S. from Mexico. The swine origin influenza, a virus that appeared in 2009 and was first found in human beings in Mexico, is a resortant with at least three parents. Six of the genes are closest in sequence to those of H1N2, triple resortant influenza viruses isolated from pigs in North America around 1999 and 2000. And idiots like Elizabeth Warren want to defund the wall to fund coronavirus research. President Obama let 1,000 Americans die of H1N1 before declaring that it was a problem. We're far, 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 far ahead of that already. The response has been excellent. In all the negativity you're hearing is political, every bit of it. Don't forget that. The Democrats and the progressive press want to destroy President Trump. Hey, that's all for today. God bless you. Have a good one. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Oh, we're done.